Kingsmouth, stranger.
Hi, I'm Rob Poynton from the Innsmouth Book Club. Join me and my fellow guide, John Chadwick, as we take you on a fortnightly tour of Innsmouth. We visit places such as the Picture House, the Library, and Innsmouth Museum to discuss all aspects of weird fiction, whether it be book, film, music, TV, or art. As well as that, we stop over at the Gilman House to have a chat with a resident guest. That includes authors, artists, musicians, in fact, Lovecraftian creatives of all types. You can find our free shows on Patreon, and there you can also sign up as a patron, which brings you bonus content, plus a monthly PDF copy of Innsmouth News, which features articles, author spotlights, all the latest news and reviews, and more. You can find us at patreon.com/InnsmouthBC. We hope to see you soon, because remember, Innsmouth isn't just a place, it's a state of mind.
You're listening to KZOM, Oleander Public Radio.
Welcome to People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos.
So, I mean, they usually save Saturday nights for, like, you know, the big names.
But yeah.
I mean, we're a big name.
I'm working on it.
I mean the people that are in movies.
Oh, I guess. I mean, sure.
All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome once again to People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. This is episode 2, season 19. And yeah, welcome once again. I am, of course, DB Spitzer, your editor and producer, and to my virtual right co-hosts, David Heath, Gretchen Brooks. How the heck are you doing this week?
I am well.
Awesome. I'm pretty rad.
Cool. I'm doing pretty good too. So this week we are talking about John Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness, the third part of the Apocalypse Trilogy. And before that, we're going to be talking about Walking Worms. Yeah, from.
So I do have a question about The Mouth of Madness.
Yeah.
Is it John Carpenter's or is it Sutter Kane's?
Ooh. Yeah, that's a tricky one. But yeah, no, it's John Carpenter's. Oh. It says so right here on Wikipedia. But yeah, no, we're going to be talking about that. And we're going to be talking about the concept of worms that walk from originally H.P. Lovecraft's The Festival. And I don't know, does it come from something before that? We'll talk about that. All right, let's go. So we're talking about worms that walk. Worm that walks. It says, you know, what I'm looking at says it's an entity created for Call of Cthulhu, but I'm pretty sure it came from the festival.
So yes. Peterson based. Oh, I'm sorry. But
no, go ahead.
So Peterson based the crawling one, which is the worm that walks, on a throwout line from the festival.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yes, the it's definition one, you know, the creature. Definition two, the concept, and the concept is definitely Lovecraftian. I would say the creature, though, is Peterson.
Mm.
Yeah.
I feel like this is another one of those Lovecraft missed opportunity moments, honestly. Like, the concept of an idea, the concept of this idea, like this monster, this worm that walks, like, I just think that what a cool name, A. Mm-hmm. Concept-wise, really cool idea. I mean, we've seen it multiple times in, like, all over – Like, we saw a version of this as Oogie Boogie. We saw a version of this as, so there you go, everybody. From now on, you're going to think of the worm that walks as Oogie Boogie. But like, in Dogma, one of the demons from Dogma, or no, I'm sorry. From, Constantine, there's a like a bug monster type thing. And also Dogma, I think too, in that movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I think it's such a cool, like, honestly, the festival is like a really, it's not a very Lovecraftian Lovecraft story in some ways, if that makes any sense. Like it, I mean, there, it's a whole, like, yes, coming back to your home ancestral land. He loves that concept. That's a trope of his. But it just, the way that the story is read or unfolds, it has almost a lyricism to it, like a poetic aspect to it.
Yeah.
I really love this story. I guess I haven't read it. I hadn't read it really in its intent. And wow, what a good one. Like, not an unreliable narrator. I mean, it is narrated because we're seeing the point of view of our main character here. Is his name even named?
I'm sure he's not.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like he's named.
Wisely did Ibn Sajabo say that the happy is the tomb where no wizard hath lain. I mean, we don't really get a name, but we get someone who's like saying, oh man, it's great when there's not like a wizard that's going to come up from the ashes and, you know, plague a town because some worms ate it.
but
even like the idea of like the mask holding the like, and encasing the wax mask is also like very vivid stories, a very vivid imagery in that.
Yeah. In fact, you're right. S.T. Joshi refers to this as a prose poem.
Yeah.
What's that?
Joshi refers to this as a prose poem.
Oh, cool. Okay, so I wasn't wrong in that. I mean,
no, you're absolutely right.
That does it does have a feel to it. Yeah. Gosh, like even when he talks about like the way the churchyard looks and things like that, it's so like striking.
Yeah. And so it was written in 1923, which is like just leaving his Poe phase, his Dunsany phase, and and going into the Cosmic Core. So it's one of those, I think.
Oh, no wonder.
From, you know, one style to another.
Yeah.
So, I just love this line. A horde of tamed, trained, hybrid-winged things that no sound eye could ever wholly grasp or sound brain ever wholly remember. I just thought that was cool.
Oh, no. There's so much. There's a lot of cool little lines in the festival. It's pretty cool.
I feel like it's a proto version of like Innsmouth in ways.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong?
I don't know if you're wrong, but it's like Kingsport, where this takes place, is different than Innsmouth. Innsmouth has its own problems, while Kingsport, it's a town of ancient wizards and once a year, a bunch of them get together and they you know, hang out with Bayaki and do all their Christmas stuff.
Or, I mean, more is it like Dunwich Horror, I mean, in a way. No, I meant the other one.
Yeah, I personally think of it as its own place and its own thing. Like Kingsport, that's where the High House in the Mists is. That's where the Terrible Old Man lives. I mean,
okay.
It's got its own problems, just like
that's like less of the fishy aspects and more of the wizardry and like that stuff. Okay, That's how I gotta break down like Lovecraft stuff for me, is like, is this fishy or is it spooky wizards?
Yeah.
Or is it action heroes?
Yeah, this is spooky wizards.
But it is sort of, he is developing this concept that we now call Lovecraft Country.
Sure.
And this is definitely part, and I'm pretty sure it predates, say, Charles Dexter Ward. But this is more,
right.
he's kind of concentrating on that area of New England.
Gotcha. It's a nice little short story, easy read. I like that it's a Christmas story, so it's kind of fun. I can picture like the sound of Christmas music really far away, and like just and fires crackling, as he said, or not crackling.
Yeah, no, you have this like juxtaposition of like kind of like almost a Dickensian, not Dickensian, but Victorian Christmas. This English this English town. But it's American, but it's the kind of town Lovecraft is like, you know, one of these coastal towns, these quaint coastal towns, and snows everywhere, and it's so beautiful, and you can smell the food and hear the this and that, and just right underneath all that holiday festivity is the festival, which is not very Christian. Exactly. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's fun and funny at the same time. I don't know if it's meant to be funny, but because I can never tell when Lovecraft's trying to be funny. But yeah.
Yes. And I think that was one of Sonya Green's problems too. But yes, this was kind of when he was more being satirical.
Okay.
For its period of time. And
gotcha.
So this concept, though, like I said, is really taken on in role-playing games.
Yes.
And it started with the Shadow of Yog-Sothoth, which was written by Sandy Peterson, and I'm pretty sure published in 1984.
Yep.
And there is the entity, the Crawling Chaos, which he takes from this part, and he codifies it, and it seems to be not an entity, but a race.
Yeah.
Although I'm pretty sure only one of them, and not to spoil it for anyone who's playing the game, only one appears. And 3.5 D&D loved this concept.
Yes.
And just went hog wild with it. And I think it's Caius is based on this. One of the evil gods that is a bunch of bugs. But almost every all sort of role playing games kind of took on this from Peterson's version in the old World of Darkness and Werewolf. There was the Worm, which is
totally,
as well as the Hollow Man, which were like creatures like this. Rift's got a version. There's a whole lot, because Peterson's going to be very influential in Pathfinder. So there's a whole bunch of them in Pathfinder.
Yes.
There's even Mutants and Masterminds has a villain called the Collective, which is, I think, also based on Marvel's Hive.
Okay.
Hive, which also appeared on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as the big bad guy one of the years. So a lot of role-playing games just love this concept. Gamma World.
Yeah.
Everything basically has it. In fact, the Worm That Walks is used probably more as a D&D term than a Lovecraftian term.
Yeah. Definitely. I wanted to say that in a movie we watched recently, there's kind of like the concept of the worm that walks, but it's the harbinger of doom that turns into a pile of beetles from Prince of Darkness.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, no. Worm That Walks, that's... It's a crazy thing. It's been in everything from, like, I don't know. It's a concept that's shown up in everything from, as Gretchen said, Nightmare Before Christmas to H.P. Lovecraft, who I don't know if came up with it, but, you know, it's pretty cool. According to all the tropes, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Doctor Who, Power Rangers have all dealt with this kind of collective bug person concept at some point in time.
Yeah. Constantine, the movie with John Wick in it.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, especially now.
Yeah.
This is one of the things, and I love myself practical effects. I think this is one thing that CGI could actually pull off pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if it's been done in any of the Mummy movies, but like inside of a mummy being like nothing but scarab beetles, I think that would be pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, the first one. Totally.
Oh, the first one did that? Okay, cool.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Because they made it out of his, made it into a part of the original, like, Hollywood ride that you could go on. And it burned down, but there was like a mummy's thing.
Okay. All right. Well, that's cool. So, yeah, any other examples? Anything else we can think of with The Worm That Walks?
Not really, other than Oogie Boogie.
yeah, that's a fun one. All right. Well, up next, we will be talking about something just as crazy as a walking worm. That's a 1994 John Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness. All right. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Hey, everyone. It's me, DB. Just reminding you, check out our Facebook. Check out our Instagram. Check out our YouTube, and just look for PGTTCM. Google us, find us at PGTTCM.com, and yeah, help support the show any way you can, even if that's just liking us, you know, let us know that you think we're cool. I don't know. Back to the show.
In Legacy Door, a lurker from space casts a shadow over time.
We opened our eyes upon the human world. We found ourselves lying on an especially yielding bed in a room displaying scattered relics of their shallow past, tied together by more recently produced items meant to blend with the relics. Typical.
A sensitive journalist dreams of unknown lives.
It seems like every time I close my eyes, they get stronger. I can't even say the last time I had a normal sleep, let alone a dreamless one.
An outspoken lawyer defends the suspect in an unspeakable crime.
And that client was Jonathan Strauss, held for the murder of his daughter Abigail and her companion Harrison Reese.
And a stalwart investigator tries to drag it all into the light.
Some of the Reeses and the Strausses have been involved with something that seems to include an obsession with bloodlines and longevity for at least decades.
Legacy Door is a weekly cosmic horror mystery podcast. An ensemble of actors tell a story, also available in paperback, Kindle, and audiobook. Available now.
Moving on to the next part, just to remind everyone, if you like what you're hearing, like this episode, share it with people, subscribe to the podcast, find us on Facebook, we're under People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. We're on Twitter. I don't really check Twitter, so it's just kind of the automatic feed. If you just want to listen to us on Twitter for some reason, you can find us on any place, any podcatchers that are out there. Of course, Facebook, Instagram, and of course, the YouTube, where this episode will be. And yeah.
This part of the show doesn't have a theme song. This part of the show doesn't have a theme song yet. Dave and DB and Gretchen go to the movies. Hopefully next week we'll have a real theme song. Yeah.
Hey, everyone. We are back. And this week we're talking about In the Mouth of Madness. I think I picked this one.
I think so.
And what I have to ask you two is, have you ever read any Sutter Kane, or do you like? I can't remember what the guy says when he swings the axe. But
do you read Sutter Kane?
Exactly. Thank you. Ugh. All right. Yeah, In the Mouth of Madness, third part of the Apocalypse trilogy. Obvious nod to At the Mountains of Madness by H.P. Lovecraft, and was distributed by New Line Cinemas. Came out in 1994. Sam Neill is the main character who,
Trent.
What's that?
Trent. John Trent.
Yeah, John Trent. let's talk about this. So, In the Mouth of Madness, what do you guys think?
First of all, I love that I've forgotten that this movie came out in 1994 and aged pretty well.
Yeah.
Every time I watch it, I notice something like a little different every time. And I feel like I watch this like every few years or so at this point.
Yeah.
Especially after getting like the I think it was like the shock, whatever release of it. I love the cast, especially his, what is her name? Oh my gosh, where did my brain go?
Style?
Yes, I love her because I love her from, you said the biggest crush on her too, because she was the main vampire in Fright Night 2.
Okay.
Love her. Oh, here we go. Yeah, what is that actress's name?
It is Julie Carmen.
Yes, thank you. I love that Sutter Kane is, Duke Leto from David Lynch's version of the Dune.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, no, this is, I remember when this came out, I remember seeing it in the theater and thinking that the music for this movie was garbage.
Yeah, it's all, it's really bad, not Metallica. That's what Gabe called it last night. I was, laughed really hard. I was like, oh, yeah, that's totally what it is.
The thing is he wanted to get Enter the Sandman and couldn't get it. And they're like, no.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. So he's like, fine, I'll make my own Enter the Sandman.
No wonder. I had no idea. Oh, my God. I just learned something new. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So you want to know something creepy?
Oh, go for it.
What city do you think that church is in?
Oh, Toronto?
Yeah, I was going to say Markham. Markham.
Markham. Take the M off and become Arkham. Yeah, Markham, Ontario.
Okay. Well, did you notice that the old lady from the place, her name is Mrs. Pickman?
Pickman, yep.
Yep.
I almost died. I was like, oh my God.
And her picture keeps changing. It's a picture.
Yep. I mean, there's just so many things, like so many lovely little, like, here you go, Lovecraft nerds. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Even down to the point where it's like the book covers really remind me of those Lovecraft covers from like the 90s for like, I don't know if it was Tor or Penguin or who it was.
But they had, yeah, Tor and Del Rey.
The surrealist horror with like... the Grim Reaper showing you its ribs.
Yeah, I think that's before.
I think it reminds me of that artist Nick the Hat who comes to Lovecraft Film Festival every year.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It totally reminds me of his work.
Oh, totally, totally. But yeah, no, it's definitely has like, they look like horror novels. I mean.
Oh, absolutely.
It's kind of like they are kind of not pointing the finger, but like paying homage possibly to Stephen King or just outright being like, Yeah, it's Stephen King, but also at the same time, it's not Stephen King because he's better than Stephen King. But, you know, no one else sells Sutter Kane.
Well,
not even
I thought
Stephen
it was cool
King.
That the publishing company's name was Arcane, for one.
Yes. Yeah.
And we have this, basically Trent becomes the unreliable narrator.
Yes.
Which I was all, ooh, it dawned on me last night watching. I was like, oh my God, even his character is a trope, like a Lovecraft trope, because he's like the straight guy, essentially. And he's the unreliable narrator because we start off with him being committed and then we work our way back into how this became and then come full circle and then the story continues. I just really, there's so many cool things. John Carpenter is like the best in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Just a master of horror in general. But like, I personally would never have put this as part of the Apocalypse trilogy, and except for the fact that we have our ending, not to how to spoil a 30 year film.
It's about how the world ends,
right?
Or does it? Or is it how the movie ends?
Has it only just begun?
Yeah.
Although my favorite part is when he gets to the theater, the poster.
Yeah.
The movie is made by New Line Cinema. Mm-hmm. It's produced by John Carpenter, and it stars John Trent and Linda Stiles.
Yeah.
And a lot of the actual crew is also put on that on the fake poster.
That's pretty cool. That's
my
cool.
Favorite is the he goes, "You do know I like the color blue." And then he looks around at the bus and I was all, "Oh my God, I love that scene." And then he starts screaming.
Yes.
Can you imagine being next to somebody on a train or a plane or a bus and they are dead asleep and then start screaming like that? Oh my God, I'm sure that was terrifying. Like, just being like, holy shit, this dude just freaking out. But then the blue tone, that it's not just like that, it's like he was all like, "I'm just gonna use a blue gel filter." No, it was like everybody was wearing blue, the old lady's hair was blue. I mean, it was so cool. The hippie sunglasses behind him, her glasses were blue. It was just such a cool like moment. There were so many of those in that movie anyways. And there was also some really silly shit, too, like the, "I'm losing myself, I'm losing myself." You're like, okay. Taken from an 11 to a 5.
Or the mutant Stiles.
Yeah.
So apparently that was done by a contortionist wearing a mask.
Yeah.
What?
The thing was shot.
That's wild.
Yeah, I like the fact that Viggo the Carpathian is just a townsfolk person.
Yeah, my spouse was like, "Who is that?" I was like, "Oh, that's Viggo the Carpathian." And he was like, "Oh, okay."
Why does this guy look terrible? Why does he stand out like a sore thumb? I mean, it's like
it looks terrible too. Like, she's messed up.
Yeah.
The only thing that didn't hold up was the whatever, I don't know if they use stop motion or if they use like a robot for Mrs. Pickman, but when they show her and her tentacles, she looks a little like I'm from Disney.
Yeah, Hall of Presidents almost, but yeah.
Definitely. definitely the vibe.
Yeah. And also, we can't forget that the editor is Moses.
What?
Charlton Heston. Yeah, and I'm like, oh, my brain. What did Dave just say? That was word salad.
I broke too up for a second there. I was like, wait. Oh, yeah, Charlton Heston.
Yeah.
And one of his last things, too.
I was going to say, that was probably one of the last roles Charlton Heston was in. But yeah.
Mm. Gosh, thank how God many Lovecraft stories would you say this came from?
Oh, I feel like this comes from a ton of Lovecraft stories, Just like three off the top of my head, but I also feel like it comes from others for sure.
Chambers.
Yeah, oh, Chambers. Totally. I want to say King, yeah. Stephen King for sure. Yeah.
Chambers being the whole church thing, right?
Well, the King in Yellow, the book, if you read it, it's going to go crazy.
Yeah. And like once you notice, once you're aware of this thing, you'll start seeing this color more and more. Just like, I don't know. I mean, there is the scene where it's just blue, but
yeah,
you'll notice that there's more blue throughout the film in other parts than other parts. And it ties into the theme of the movie. I want to say in name only is there in the Mountains of Madness, the whole Hobbs End. It reminds me of Arkham, Massachusetts, but it also reminds me of Derry, Maine. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's like the old ones that are coming to reclaim the earth. And that's like straight up Dunwich Horror, straight up Call of Cthulhu. There's a fair amount of stuff. But
and if you do sort of a stop on the monsters that are chasing them, they're very much a deep one and Cthulhu.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah, they have like that kind of anglerfish mouth and lots of like long protruby arms and stuff like that. Totally.
Yeah.
No, I love film in general, so it's hard for me to be like, I hated this. There's nothing I hate. I mean, other than The Ghost of Mars, that was so stinking dumb.
Oh, yeah, I remember seeing that in the theater, and it was like, ugh.
But this movie has some dragging moments in it, but other than, I mean, like, I'd say around the third act, we start to kind of drag a little bit.
Yeah. That's not uncommon, though, in third acts.
Totally.
Yeah. Totally. And certainly not uncommon with John Carpenter third act. Yeah.
Well, he gets a little like, well, he gets a little caught in those loops of like the "this is not reality" kind of shit moment where we're like, where we wake up from a scream and we wake up again and we wake up a third time. It's like those kind of get redundant after a while. Like we're like, okay, we get it. He's asleep, but he's also not asleep. The sleeper's awakened. I got it.
Yeah. So I found an actual list of influences, and it says At the Mountains of Madness, Pickman from Pickman's Model, Sutter Kane has similar titles to Lovecraft stories, The Whispering, The Whisper of the Dark, which is The Whisper in Darkness, Thing in the Basement, Thing on the Doorstep, Haunter Out of Time, Haunter of the Dark, The Shadow Out of Time, and The Hobbs End Horror, or The Dunwich Horror.
Oh.
And, Hobbs End Underground Station is a reference to Quartermass in the Pit.
Yes. Interesting.
And then Wikipedia just reaffirmed my what I said about they couldn't get Enter the Sandman from Metallica, so John Carpenter just made his own.
That's hilarious. I wondered, because honestly, that was the first thing my spouse said, was like, this Shout Factory, by the way, is what I was trying to say earlier. I just lost my mind.
No problem.
That was the first thing my spouse said, was like, what's this like Metallica Enter Sandman song? And I was all like, he's just probably like, this is my own.
Yeah,
exactly. So here's a thought of what I think parallels this, and hear me out, because it's going to sound crazy. Deadpool.
All right.
And why? Because both movies are this combination of story and meta. There's two parallels. And, so there's this cosmic horror story, but there's also this meta story on writing, movie, horror, all wrapped in one. at the same point where it's leaning on the fourth wall. Same thing. Deadpool is a superhero action movie, but it's also this sort of satire, you know, deconstruction of superheroes. In the same way that this movie is a, you know, it's a cosmic horror story, but it's also talking about writing. And it's obviously Carpenter's having fun about movie making and books to movies. So I see the parallel. Maybe I need to go to the mental hospital, but yeah, I think that there's actually two different layers here.
Huh. I like that.
Okay.
I was just having a weird thought about how Sam Neill is in so many horror movies. Yeah. I mean, just how many horror movies have we watched in the last 2 years that have had Sam Neill in them?
So he's definitely, what, in Possession? And yes. What else? Possession. Which one?
Possession.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I'm thinking, I feel like...
The Omen.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute, we haven't watched that. Oh, we haven't watched that. We haven't watched that, but...
I just watched that on my own, shit.
Yeah. I was thinking, oh, maybe I watch a lot of... horror movies with Sam Neill.
That's true. And one other thing I started thinking on this is Carpenter. First of all, Sam Neill is this amazing actor.
Yes.
And he normally does a very good job of covering up his New Zealand accent.
Yeah.
Carpenter lets it roll here.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, he lets all the actors roll with their original accents. And I think, again, that's part of this. Where did this New York guy get this New Zealand accent? Where did this person living out in New Hampshire get this German accent? I think that Carpenter did it on purpose.
Yeah, no, I love it when that happens in movies, like, especially like, like Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's like, wait a minute. How did this guy become a cop? In America, or it's like Arnold. I mean, sometimes it's like, oh, he grew up on an island, isolated from everyone, and everyone had an accent. And then other times it's like, oh yeah, no, he's just the local sheriff. But
but Neil could have covered it up. He has no problem covering up his accent.
Yeah,
but. I think that he didn't this time because I've never seen it written, but I think Carpenter instructed him to use his normal accent.
Okay.
That's good though. I mean, it's nice to hear him speaking naturally. He feels more, but Sam is a great actor. So he always feels more natural anyways, just hearing him in his regular accent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his accent doesn't go away, but I noticed as the movie gets going, it just becomes more normal to my ear as the movie progresses.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. It's like, I don't find myself paying that much attention to his accent. I don't know. It just...
Well, he does, like, he can switch between, like, a very astute, like, British accent. I feel like his character in, Jurassic World, Jurassic Park, he has, like, a kind of a British accent.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Or...
Slightly.
Or I was going to say more of a kind of, transatlantic accent.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what they developed that's like an American version of an English accent that they invented in the 30s and the 40s to make their characters seem smart.
Yeah.
Totally. Totally.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I love the transatlantic accent. But yeah, no. This is, again, I'm not going to say this is an amazing film. This isn't like, the best John Carpenter film ever or anything
the
like that.
It's one of not the better
Lovecraft movies.
What's that?
It's one of the better Lovecraft movies.
By far.
Even though that technically it's not a Lovecraft movie, it's definitely one of the better ones, I think.
Sure. I mean, even though it's not a Lovecraft movie, it feels like technically it is a Lovecraft movie.
I think so.
As many references as they make, but yeah.
I think it's a mythos movie, at least.
Sure, definitely. Yeah. So... of the three Apocalypse Trilogy, what's your second favorite after The Thing?
Prince of Darkness.
I'm going to say this one, but there's none of them are bad.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I don't think any of them are bad. And I want to say Prince of Darkness myself. The dream scenes, or not dream scenes, always, like, I don't know, that's really kind of influenced a lot of stuff that I've done. But yeah, no. And this is a cool movie, but it doesn't really stand out like Prince of Darkness, and is not nearly as memorable as The Thing. But yeah. In the Mouth of Madness. We did it, everyone.
Yeah, it's not honestly, it's not a really super deep film. It's like, it's very, you get what you get, and this is what you get.
Yeah.
I have to say, I was listening to a song called Sugar Cane.
Uh-huh.
And I swore when I was listening to it that they were saying Sutter Cane.
Oh.
Did read some fun trivia about this. Like, this, the paperboy is Hayden Christensen's first role. That Hobbs is an old word for refer to the devil. Let's see.
Hobgoblin.
Oh yeah. And then the car keys that Julie swallows. They were made out of pasta, things like that.
Oh yeah.
There's all kinds of random nuggets of, like, the wall of monsters at the end was not several monsters being controlled individually. It's actually one single effect that was attached to a wall with like a wheelbase, and they were pushing it.
Oh, cool.
Isn't that cool? It kind of reminded me of do you remember in the movie Labyrinth, the tunnel cleaners?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what it totally reminded me of.
Gotcha.
There was some fun commentary on this. It was like Cthulhu Cathometary. I was like, oh, stab it.
Yeah.
Cathometary. Stab it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. One thing I saw about this is that it had a budget of $8 million and a box office of $8.9 million.
Woo!
Yeah. There was a reason. I mean, this had a little bit to do with why John Carpenter didn't make another movie for a little bit. It wasn't widely received or well received. I mean, people liked it enough. I think Roger Ebert gave it 2 out of 4 stars, which I don't know why you do 4 stars, because then it's like, what? I don't know if it's like, how do you say something's mediocre? But anyway.
Yeah. I mean, legit. It's not his best, but better than others.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I think
he's still better than others.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of his stuff, it's more respected with time.
Yeah. No, I want to say when it comes to his 90s stuff, I like it a lot more than Village of the Damned.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah. And I was going to say, what about Ghosts of Mars? But that came out in 2001, so.
That's bad. 90s and the early aughts were not his best era.
No, not really, no.
That's okay. We have a lot of other really good things from him.
Oh yeah. Yep. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening to People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. Yeah, this has been us talking about John Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness and the concept of the worm that walks, originally from H.P. Lovecraft's The Festival. So, yeah, thank you all for listening. Thank you all for checking us out. Let people know about us if they like Lovecraftian stuff, horror movies, or any of that other cool stuff that we talk about. You guys have anything coming up cool happening soon?
Easter.
Okay.
I don't celebrate Easter, but yeah, there's
we have family dinner, so
we got Hanami. That cherry blossoms are popping, so my little fashion club is getting together and sitting under the cherry blossoms.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so that's what I'm doing this weekend. Also going to see Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
All right.
That's actually kind of fun.
I love that movie.
That's actually kind of a fun movie.
I have a quick question about next week's topic.
Yeah.
Who is Olus Wormus?
Oh, what's that?
He is. I'm not. I believe he's a real person, actually.
Yes, he is a real person.
And he is, basically, he wrote medieval books. And I'm gonna have to do some specific.
Well, obviously, research. We'll talk about it next week. But yeah. I'm just curious.
So but Lovecraft references his writings whether they are real or not.
Yes.
Okay.
And what movie are we watching?
We are watching Hellboy.
Ooh. Hell yeah.
Oh yeah. All right, everyone. We will see you then, and we will talk to you in the future. Stay squiggly, keep it weird, and all that other good stuff. And yeah. If you happen to be at NorwestCon, I will be there from March 28th to April 1st. I don't know. Something like that. Have yourselves a good one and talk to you all in the future.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. That was a good show.
Yeah, that was funny. Oh, right. I'm so sorry. The Cthulhu Cathometry just was killing me. I could not get over that.
No, that's funny. That's fun stuff.
Yeah, and I did double check. Olaus Wormus is actually, he is a real person that Lovecraft.
Oh, right. Oh yeah, no. He's a Danish scholar.
Yeah.
Or was a Danish scholar, yeah. Natural history, medicine, literature, all that fun stuff.
Oh, word.
But, he Lovecraft references them in the history of the Necronomicon.
Hmm. Yeah, and before I hop off, Dave, what is the name of the guy that you interviewed, and what's his company?
Modiphius.
Okay.
Modiphius, and his name is John Houlihan.
Okay.
Yes, and so if you they're like. Right now, one of the biggest RPG makers. They've got the Star Trek, they've got the Dune title, they've got Fallout for role playing.
Oh, cool! Uh-huh.
They had Conan, but the IP moved. Yeah. So, do you know just ballpark? I'll let them know when you think that. I mean, I know you got a lot going on.
I was
going
to try and have it come out tomorrow.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I know how swamped you are. John Houlihan. Houlihan. And it's, Modiphius. If you can't remember, just type in Octoon Cthulhu or Star Trek role-playing game. And you'll bring up their website.
Okay.
Okay.
Hey. Sounds good.
Awesome. Thank you. And I will get this right out to you. And I've got to go feed some baby goats.
All right.
And so I got to be real quick. I know you guys are going. I got to be kind of real cagey about this because of the law changing. So officially, we are now just a goat brush clearing business.
Okay.
Or we'll be on the first, but we may have some visitors by Sunday.
Oh, okay.
Some baby
goats. Is the Easter bunny coming?
No, the goat, the baby. Well, maybe the Easter bunny is going to bring the baby goats. Okay, then I will. Okay, I'll get this right over to you. You guys take care.
You too.
Sounds good. Talk to you later.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye.